God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things. This is Brother Hutchings inviting the listeners to another Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. And here now is Brother Jerry.
Back in August, Dr. Larry Spargimino spoke with Dr. Keith Smith about the health care bill known as Obamacare on one of our live internet webcasts. Today, you'll hear that interview. Dr. Smith is CEO and co-founder of the Surgery Center in Oklahoma City. He's also an anesthesiologist and a member of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. Dr. Smith has been informed by government officials about much of what is in the bill. He'll be sharing some of that information. Here now is Dr. Spargimino and his guest, Dr. Keith Smith.
Dr. Smith, thank you so much for being our guest.
Thanks for having me.
There are certain flare words, you know, they produce a visceral reaction, sweaty palms, racing heart. Certainly the word Obamacare is one of those flare words. Our listening audience has heard so much about Obamacare. I know there's always the danger of oversimplifying, but as best as you can, what is Obamacare and what are some of your basic concerns regarding Obamacare?
Well, I refer to Obamacare more often than not as the Unaffordable Care Act, taking a lesson from our neighbors to the north, the Canadians. It's important to keep in mind how this bill came about, and that will help people better understand what its purpose is. The brilliance of the diabolical brilliance, I should say, of the Obama administration was to identify who the players and parties were who would oppose this bill. And they were the big insurance companies and the big hospitals and big pharmaceutical companies. And these are big corporate entities that typically line the pockets of the Republicans. So they brought these guys in and said, write this bill so that you like it. And they switched sides of the aisle. And now these giant corporations, health corporations, are in the pockets of the Democrat. When you saw what happened to their stock prices just moments after Justice Roberts and the Supreme Court's ruling was revealed, they soared. So the purpose of this bill, of this health care legislation, is to make these companies a whole lot of money. That's the first purpose. And I've written recently that anything that oozes out of Washington, D.C. is meant to line the pockets of those who wrote or promoted it. And this is a prime example of that. The second thing to remember is that this bill was never meant to succeed. This bill is meant to fail. Its purpose is to introduce medical chaos and economic chaos into the medical marketplace. And then the prices will soar. People will find health care more expensive and of poorer quality than they've ever seen. And, of course, the cry will be for the government to come rescue us with a single-payer system. And ultimately, that's the goal. That's the goal of the statists. So some of the tools that are inside of the Obamacare or Unaffordable Care Act legislation that are particularly onerous are, one thing that's not talked about much are the electronic medical records. The electronic medical records that are mandated to be used in this bill will serve, I say it serves as the KGB of medical intelligence, because there will be no such thing as medical privacy anymore. Anybody that goes to the hospital, everything about their health status, history, condition, will go to Uncle Sam. And when you go see your local physician, if he's succumbed to the pressure, and the pressure's great, if he's succumbed to the pressure to adopt these electronic medical record systems, there will be no medical privacy. And in the physician's defense, they were shoved against the wall by the government. They were told, if you don't adopt and embrace these medical record systems, we'll cut your Medicare payments, so that it's vicious.
Wow.
The whole idea of medical privacy goes away. The sanctity of the doctor-patient relationship that people traditionally have counted on, it really goes away with this legislation. So then there will be epidemiologists, bureaucrats, who will look at all of the data they receive by virtue of this electronic medical records funnel, and then they'll decide that this or that disease costs too much to treat. The rationing will begin. In Canada, that is commonplace. I anesthetized a lady who needed a minor hip surgery, and she had waited 2 years and had 3 more years to wait.
Wow.
And that is sort of the right to health care in Canada really just means you have a right to a place in line, or you have a right to hope for care. And I think that is the direction we're headed as a result of this legislation.
Well, I've seen some charts comparing health care and the quality of health care in the U.S. with health care in Canada and England. For example, one of the charts, it gives the percentage of seniors needing hip replacement who received it within 6 months. Well, in the U.S., it comes out to about 90%. In England, according to this chart, it's only 15%, and in Canada, 43%. So that testimony, that account that you just shared, is very, very telling. And I've often felt that the mere size, the complexity of the bill, what is it, some 2,700 pages? That alone is intimidating.
That's right. You know, in Canada, the number of people that needed hip and knee replacements became such an embarrassment for the government that they actually ramped up the resources to shorten those waiting lines because of all the bad press they're getting. But as a result, people that need other surgeries are now, their lines are even longer. So that's one reason it's only 6 months. Prior to all of the bad press, just a couple of years ago, the waiting line for a total joint, hip or knee replacement was years. The most shocking thing to come out of Great Britain was a report that was recently released about which there was no denial, and that is that the British National Health Service admitted to euthanizing British patients in the hospital to free up hospital bed space. And the numbers are incredible. It turns out that one-third of all patients that die in British National hospitals are euthanized. And
wow.
It's 135,000 people a year. The rationing ultimately deteriorates into euthanizing people that are deemed a liability, that are seen as an economic liability. They ultimately, if everyone's health is the subject matter and the business of everybody else, then the pressure of society is to ultimately euthanize people whose care costs a lot of money.
Sounds like Dr. Kevorkian, Dr. Death, has won this game. That's exactly what, and of course we hear so much about the Earth, the planet being overpopulated, even going back to Jacques Cousteau, he was speaking about too many people, and this fits into this paradigm. But Dr. Smith, how do those in the healthcare field generally feel about Obamacare? Now, I've heard, I don't know if it's true, that many are planning to leave the healthcare field, and I've heard that some are planning to leave the country, maybe go to Costa Rica or someplace like that. Is that true, or is that just totally outrageous?
Oh, I think it is true. One of the last surveys that I saw showed that at least 75% of practicing physicians were considering retiring.
Wow.
If not by the time this is fully implemented in 2014, shortly thereafter. I don't know that the numbers will be that high. I think that however bad it is for physicians, that ultimately this is a disaster for the patients. And I read articles from time to time that talk about how the business of medicine is going to be adversely affected by this legislation. But there are going to be a lot of people that die, and there are going to be a lot of people that are euthanized and killed. How our business is affected, in my mind, pales in comparison to the suffering that we're about to see.
Right.
And I'm no defender of the current system. The current system is a disaster primarily because the government has intervened in so many ways, making health insurance, the power to purchase health insurance by an employer, for instance, it dwarfs the power of an individual to buy health insurance because of the tax code. And so that's left people locked in jobs that they hate just because they don't want to lose their insurance.
Right.
But that was Congress's gift to the big insurance companies. So there are so many interventions by the federal government that have caused this mess that we're in. And it's the lack of real free market principles that has caused the price to be so high and the high quality to be sporadic.
You had just mentioned free market principles. There was an article, you probably saw it in the American Spectator, I think it was in July of 2011. It was entitled Fatal Flaws of Keynesian Economics. And then you actually mentioned this in your essay. You tell the wonderful tongue-in-cheek story of one of your sons, I believe, dealing, you know, with the heat wave by turning down the air conditioning to the coldest setting and then opening all the windows to allegedly cool the planet. tell us about this fatal flaw of the government's massive stimulus spending strategy, which I think hasn't done much. How did all this tie together?
I think the best way to see the flaws in Keynes' economics is to study Frederick Bastiat, the French philosopher and statesman, because he wrote this wonderful piece about what is seen and what is not seen, and how a broken window would be seen by some people as an opportunity for the glazer to come fix it. It isn't that great for the economy. Whereas what is not seen is what could have been done with the money had the window not been broken in the first place. Mm. So this discounting of what is not seen is ultimately the flaw of Keynes. So his economics discounts the destruction of the currency and the interest payments on debt, just as my son's facetious comment that opening the windows with the air conditioner on stone, it discounts the contribution of the fan and the compressor for the air conditioner. What the point that I made linking Obamacare and global warming, which is also, I believe, another scam.
I agree with you.
is that what will be seen is that 32 million people, if you believe those numbers, and I don't, will have an insurance card. What will not be seen is that this card is going to be worthless. People, number one, physicians I know are not going to participate in this scheme primarily because of an entity that's been formed called the Independent Payment Advisory Board. And the IPAB is going to enter into price fixing just how Medicare and Medicaid have. And they will set the prices for care so low that no physicians will see these people. Mm. If you set the price in a grocery store below the cost of the grocer's, below his cost, he's not going to stock anything.
Right.
He's not going to sell anything. And it's no different in the service industry. So what will be seen is a lot of new insurance cards. What will not be as easily seen is the lack of access to care people have. Jane Orient with the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons has summed it up. She says coverage doesn't mean care. And I think that is that's a very succinct way to understand what's going to happen. I think Medicare patients, here in Oklahoma, in Edmond, I don't know a primary care physician that's taking on new Medicare patients. So if somebody relocated here from somewhere, they would really have a hard time finding somebody to take care of them. And it's because of the price fixing, and it's because of the severe penalties that are associated with physicians making mistakes on Medicare claims. So it's going to be sort of a Medicare or Medicaid for all. And they'll have this card in their wallet. They're so proud that they now have a right to health care. But what they really have is, just like the Canadians, a right to hope for care.
Well, I understand that more self-funded insurance plans are taking advantage of your pricing model. You sent some material. Tell us a little bit about how it works. It sounds fascinating, and it seems to be very successful.
About 3 years ago, I decided, for a couple of reasons, to put our prices online and show the whole world, you know, what we would charge for a tonsillectomy or gallbladder removal or any number of surgeries. And the first thing that happened is the Canadians started showing up at our facility because it was very reasonable for them to buy their way out of a place in line in Vancouver or Ottawa or wherever they were. One of the next things that happened is companies that are big enough, and it's usually 60 or more employees, although I know people that are that just have 30 employees that are big enough, they just have decided they're not going to participate in the normal insurance game, and they self-fund. They basically pay the premiums to themselves, and they hold on to that money, and if somebody gets sick or needs something, then they just write a check for it. And it's a little more complicated than that, but that's basically how it works. Well, as you can imagine, these companies became very interested in our pricing when they saw that the local not-for-profit hospital across town charges them 10 times what we do for the same thing. So we've been able to attract patients that are under the umbrella of a self-funded plan, not just from here in Oklahoma City, but from all over the United States. Mm-hmm. And some employers are paying their airfare and their hotel and a per diem amount of money to cover this because the savings is huge.
Wow. Well, now, supposing one of our listeners wants to contact you or check out your website, give us your website and contact information.
Our website is www.surgerycenterok.com.
That's www.surgerycenterok.com. Well, it sounds like you've really got some great ideas, and you've helped us to understand a little more about the nature of the beast, so to speak. I know some of the people I've read have said that Obamacare poses one of the greatest threats to our liberties, and it's draconian, I think. Is it a foregone automatic conclusion that we will have Obamacare with the recent Supreme Court decision and other things that are happening?
I think it will be very surprising, even if there is a regime change in Washington, D.C., it'll be very surprising if this bill is repealed. Because the people who benefit from it are the same people who are the friends, the old friends of the Republicans. So I will be very surprised if the Republicans lash out against the giant hospital, American Hospital Association, the big insurance companies, the big pharmaceutical companies. I'll be very surprised because they will then jeopardize the huge money contributions that these corporations make. I think if they think they're going to lose their seat or they're going to lose their power, I think they'll choose power over the money. Mm. I was there. I've been asked up there a couple of times now, and there are some good people in power in Washington, but not very many. There are very, very few. Most people subscribe to this influence peddling game, regardless which side of the aisle you're looking at. It's about morphing their power for cash. Wow. And but there are some good people up there. I think James Lankford is a really good guy. I think yes. Coburn is a good guy. And I don't agree with those guys 100% because I'm more of a libertarian type of. I have more of that influence in me, and they're not quite to that place, but they're very principled guys, and they act on those principles, and they have not succumbed to this influence peddling. There's a guy from Ohio named Jim Jordan that I really like. There's a guy named Andy Harris who's a good guy from up northeast that is a new member, and but there are just not a lot of people right. that don't subscribe to this influence peddling, and so I'll be very, very surprised if we see the whole bill go away. I think we'll see some tinkering around the edges. You'll see threats of changes or repeal, and that will basically result in a big fundraising effort for the guys who threaten to change it, because the players that stand to make a lot of money from this are going to pay a lot of money to keep this bill alive.
Well, that sort of explains for me, and I'm sure for many of our listeners, why some of the so-called good guys who we think are the good guys and who we believe are on our side, why they're not doing more. It's because they don't want to do more. They have too much to lose. So you've really, you've opened the can of worms, but at least I'm glad we know what the beast looks like.
You know, one of the most refreshing things is the rebirth of the whole idea and concept of federalism. And we're seeing states push back hard, real hard, and You have, for instance, Jim Jordan from Ohio has basically told all the governors in the United States to ignore the law. Hmm. He's told them not to set up the exchanges. And you see Rick Perry and the governor of Florida grandstanding, and mm-hmm. Tim Pawlenty in Minnesota. They're saying, you know what, we're not going to construct these exchanges. We're just not going to abide by this law. And the pushback from the states, you know, and we've been reduced to worse than colonies under the British, mm-hmm. but the pushback from the states is really refreshing. And I think that's where the key is. I think that when the states bow up, that without the consent of the governed, the feds and Uncle Sam will realize that they've gone as far as they can go, and they've gone too far. I think that's the key, is to have very, very tough folks at the state level that will just push back and, in essence, nullify this tyranny.
Mm, good advice and a good suggestion. Well, friends, our guest has been Dr. Keith Smith. He is a board-certified anesthesiologist. He is the founder of the Surgery Center of Oklahoma. The web, www.surgerycenterok.com. Keith, it's been a great, great blessing. You've really shed the light on something very important. You've given us a lot of ideas. We really appreciate your work. And I'm going to check out your blog and all of the links that you have. So, thank you so much.
It's my honor to be on your show. Thanks for having me.
The interview you just heard is from a live internet webcast heard in August of this year. Since then, another part of Obamacare has gone into effect. On Monday, October 1st, Medicare started fining hospitals that have too many patients readmitted within 30 days of discharge due to complications. That may call to your mind what Dr. Smith said about crowding in Canada and the UK and what happened there. Of course, there's so much more to come with the president's health care bill. That's why you really need a copy of Ration Care, the 60-page book by John Amon that gives details on what is in the bill. We'll send a copy in appreciation of your $10 contribution in the U.S. for one copy, or get two of the books for a $15 offering. In Canada, the gift amounts are $11 for one, $17 for two. Call right away for your copy or copies of Ration Care. The number is 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio Ministries, Post Office Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma 73008. The website address is swrc.com. Ration Care points out what Americans, and especially senior citizens, should fear about the National Health Care Plan. It's not a lengthy book, but it's packed with information you need. You may also want the two programs in this series. They're available on CD for an offering of $14 in the U.S., $15 for Canadian listeners. Phone 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio, Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008. The web address is swrc.com. We especially need to hear from those of you listening over KIOU, Shreveport, Louisiana, and KWDF in Alexandria, Louisiana. So, when you contact us, let us know you're listening. Next over most of these stations is a Bible in the News report. Join Noah Hutchings tomorrow when he talks with Chuck Harding about issues in the coming election on your Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. Welcome to today's Bible in the News report, a feature of your Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. We report on a recent news story and relate it to the Bible. Today's speaker is Dr. Kenneth Hill.
Homeland Security Today, that's hstoday.com, on the 17th of September 2012 posted an article by Anthony Kimmery that explored the factors in the violent extremism in the Muslim Somali immigrants in the Twin Cities of Minnesota. According to the article, and I quote, "A new report published by the National Consortium for the Study of Terrorism and Responses to Terrorism, or START, identified three main risk factors that, when combined, increase the potential for violent extremism in Somali American youth in Minneapolis-St. Paul. According to the report, building resilience to violent extremism among Somali Americans in Minneapolis-St. Paul, the factors include use of unaccountable times and unobserved spaces, the perceived social legitimacy of violent extremism, and contact with recruiters or associates. According to Customs and Border Protection statistics provided to Homeland Security Today through fiscal year 1999 to date, numerous Somalis have been apprehended having illegally crossed the border or otherwise entering the United States. The new findings, based on field work in a community that has experienced violent extremism, provide the groundwork for minimizing the potential for violent extremism in the community, Start said. The National Consortium for the Study of Terrorism and Response to Terrorism is a Department of Homeland Security, Science and Technology Center of Excellence based at the University of Maryland. Its report is part of a series sponsored by the Human Factors Behavioral Sciences Division of DHS&ST Directorate in support of the Prevent and Deter program, the goal of which is to sponsor research that will aid the intelligence and law enforcement communities in identifying potential terrorist threats and support policymakers in developing prevention efforts, end quote. The report describes the interaction of the risks and capacities using a model called Diminishing Opportunities for Violent Extremism, developed by two of the START researchers. They hope the research will help policymakers and government officials understand that while building resilience is important, there's no one magic bullet for enhancing resilience. Adding communities, organizations, families, governments, all working together to address young people's needs will lead to the most helpful results. And that's where we end quoting from the article. Note the three factors uncovered by the research. Number one, use unaccountable times and unobserved spaces. Number two, the perceived social legitimacy of violent extremism. Number three, contact with recruiters or associates. Consider the first factor. When we see this in areas where traditional gang violence or vandalism happens in any major city, churches or other nonprofits, along with the local governments, establish youth centers or midnight basketball to occupy the young potential hoodlums' time and energy. That probably would not work with the Muslim Somalis because of factors two and three. The social legitimacy of extreme violence, in other words, the Muslim Somali community condones and sponsors extreme violence as part of their religious practice. And this warning is found in Isaiah 1:7. Your country is desolate. Your cities are burned with fire. Your land, strangers devour it in your presence. And it is desolate as overthrown by strangers.
That's today's Bible in the News report of Southwest Radio Ministries. Be here for our next Your Watchman on the Wall program and a Bible in the News report.